Welcome to the Fangled Cast, brought to you by Fangled Technologies, where we help you convert every person your company touches into a voracious advocate for your brand.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Fangled Cast. Today's going to be influential in many ways because I'm speaking with influencer expert Jason Falls. Hey, Jason, tell everybody a little bit about yourself and what you do before we dig into the meat of the conversation.
Sure, Andrew. Thanks for having me on the show. So the short and sweet of it is I'm a digital strategist at an advertising agency called Cornette, which is based in Lexington, Kentucky. And one of the things that we do amongst a bunch of other things is influence marketing strategies and executions for our clients. I've been in the digital marketing social media space for quite some time. I've spoken at several conferences. I've written 3 books now. And, you know, just kind of fell into social media in the mid-2000s when businesses and brands were starting to do it, and have always kind of had a natural gift to kind of plug businesses in and figure out, okay, how do we leverage social channels, digital channels, PR and whatnot to connect with our audiences? And influence marketing is kind of an extension of that. So that's kind of what I do.
That's really cool. I've known Jason for a short time now and had visited the website and looked at some of the work that he did. And as everyone knows, when I bring someone on the show, I may be wrong, I may be right, but I only bring people on that I really think are experts in an area so that we can dig deep and talk about something and hopefully get better understanding and also break the myths that exist. The first myth that I always want to talk about when it comes to influence marketing is people seem to think that it's something new. Let's talk a little bit about the history of, in your opinion, of where influence marketing began, which I would say is since the beginning of time.
Yeah, I mean, if you boil it down to what you're actually trying to do, influence, right? You're trying to persuade an audience to take action, to do something, to think some way differently. And I mean, that's the definition of public relations. That's the definition in many ways of advertising. Now, the mechanisms and whether or not there's money involved and who the channels are kind of change a little bit. But influence marketing is nothing more than, you know, just taking a look at how to find this group of people, this channel, influencers. And in today's definition, a lot of people think that that's people with big audiences on social networks, but it could be anyone. I mean, I developed a strategy a couple of years ago for a local business in central Kentucky, and the people who were influencers for that business were local doctors, local dentists, local political and civic leaders, had nothing to do with how many, you know, followers they had on Instagram. Mm-hmm. So I look at influence marketing from a wider perspective rather than focusing in on the influencer and say, okay, what group of people influences the audience I'm trying to reach? And let's give them the tools, partner with them, and help them sort of carry that message forward. So if you think about it that way, influence marketing literally goes back to, you know, the first caveman saying, hey, we should go over here to get out of the way of the dinosaurs, right? I mean, it's been around forever.
Yeah, it's funny you bring up the caveman, because typically when I give the talk to someone about the beginning of influence marketing, I joke about when the caveman finally learned how to make fire. Mm-hmm. And Grog told his buddy, oak burns better. And the exactly. Next thing you know, there were no oak trees left in the forest near the cave.
that's a great way to point it out. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the overlap is great. And for those of you out there that are listening, this is why Jason's on the show, because I, for one, am tired when I start talking about influence marketing and someone says, I can't afford that person. Mm-hmm. And my response is typically, I think there's more bang for the buck in that person. People may not know, depending on the demographic that we're going for.
Well, and let me kind of blow that person's mind a little bit, because if you think about any person who has influence over an audience, over, you know, and the audience doesn't have to be huge, right? If you think about it that way, your customers are influencers, right? So people who have loyalty programs, ambassador programs, that's influence marketing. If you have an affiliate program where you're saying, hey, if you share this link or share, you know, our product with your friends and family and they buy using your little code, we're going to give you 15, 20%. That's influence marketing as well. Now, the marketing geeks will put different labels on it and call it different things and say, that's not influencers. But that's because they're thinking of influencers here, where I think we need to think of influencers here. Mm-hmm. So an influencer that, if you say, I can't afford influencers, well, if you can find one person who you build a relationship over time, and they're just someone in the community and they know you and they like you and they trust you, and you can get them to tell everybody about your grand opening or your new product, that's influence marketing too. And it doesn't cost you a dime.
The affiliate marketing program.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've done something beautiful online, and someone says, wow, where did you learn how to do that? And you give them the link, and they go there, and they don't realize that that link then would give them a commission if you decide to do that business. All of those things are influence. One of my favorite studies in influence marketing, although I hate the industry, was the tobacco industry.
Mm-hmm.
They, when they came out with those sort of millennial cigarettes, you know, cigarettes that are the same as all the other ones, but they had more, you know, less of the brand so that you could have the cool brand.
Mm-hmm.
They used to put very attractive people out into the bars with the cigarettes, and people would come by and they would say, oh, what is that? And they would give them away. Hey, you want to, mm-hmm. you want to smoke? And when a 20 something is encountering someone of the opposite gender that they find extremely attractive, offering them a cigarette, what are they going to do? They're going to taste it. And yep. The next thing you know, those brands started to really grow in the market. They do it with the alcohol business.
Yep, that's true.
There's so many different ways that we don't even know that influencer marketing is influencing us. Can you have some other examples that you've seen?
Well, I mean, that's a perfect example. In the spirits business, they call them bar babes. I'm sure that term is probably going to go, you know, out the wayside now that we've kind of entered a new era of social conflict. Yeah, that might get canceled, but they've always called them bar babes, and that works for a lot of spirits companies. Now, if you want to really drill in and say, does that particular person who is serving up shots or serving up cigarettes really have influence? You know, they don't have influence in the sense of, I trust that person implicitly and I will, you know, take any product recommendation they give me. But in the context of the bar, people are having drinks, you know, there's someone of the opposite gender who's very attractive, who's walking around offering people free things, then yes, in that circumstance, they are influential. So there's different ways to kind of bear that down. But in terms of other examples, I mean, you can talk, you know, the guy who holds the sign out on the road by the car wash, you know, with the air, you know, wavy balloon guy, right? Those are influencers to a degree. But you think of the real influencers, the really important influencers in the world, political lobbyists. I mean, that's all about jockeying influence with legislators. And if a business or a brand is employing that person to do it, you know, they're basically saying, go lobby Congress or go lobby the legislator or city council or whatever to help change legislation to be advantageous for our business. That's influence marketing too. Absolutely. So every sort of type of situation where you have an actor, whether that be a YouTuber, an Instagrammer, or the president of the Urban League, or a dentist, or whatever, and they are being engaged. It doesn't have to be via, you know, money. It can also be benefits and other things, right? But if they are being incented to then turn to the people who trust them and say, I think you should try this product, or I think you should think about this way, or I think you should, you know, do this, that's influence marketing sort of by definition, if you're looking at it from a broad perspective. And I think that's, you know, what we need to do in order to improve influencer marketing with the R is look at it in a much broader perspective. I think we'll be smarter about it then.
Yeah. One of the categories people forget about influence marketing quite often is the whole concept of product placement. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to get my product in a Hollywood film.
Right.
But it also in location. Years ago, I was involved in a business that had imported massive pieces of amethyst as decorative.
We had
a retail store, and we did very well selling these pieces. And one of the ways that we did influence marketing was to have our pieces for free on display in locations where influential people owned. So if you walked into the highest dollar jewelry store in the region, there would be a gorgeous piece of amethyst with the information on it. And because you trusted that store, the store influenced you to want to know more about those pieces and find something that was in your home.
Absolutely. And product placement, it's interesting that you bring that up, because I think a lot of people by default think of influence marketing as product placement. They think of it as I'm going to pay an Instagrammer to hold my product and smile where, you know, wherever they are. And that's influencer marketing. That's the very superficial, probably not real, reliable, and, you know, business, you know, metric driving form of influence marketing. It's common because it's out there, it's in front of the camera, you see it. But you're starting to see a shift in the industry now where even the influencers themselves on, you know, YouTube and Instagram and whatnot are saying to brands, I want to do more than just hold your product. Let's collaborate and do something deeper, because they know, the influencer knows, if they don't help you move the needle on your business, if they don't help you drive sales or conversions or whatever, then you're not going to come back to them. So the wheat is separating itself from the chaff, if you will, in the influencer space, and the ones who really understand marketing and business and they have to drive business metrics are starting to say, wait, we can't just do product placement anymore. We've got to do more than that. Else it's not going to be worth your money to invest in me. And so I think we're starting to see the market mature quite a bit there.
You know, there's almost like a pendulum. I talk about pendulums all the time in terms of how things work. The beginning of it is, I see your product on the shelf in the back during a YouTube video. It's there. The second is seeing you actually use it. Mm-hmm. The third is actually endorsing it. Mm-hmm. And the fourth is actually recommending it.
Yep.
You know, I see it, I use it, I show you I like it, and I tell you to buy it. Yep. And there's different stages of that become the influence. One of my favorite conversations these days, it seems like almost everybody I know watches shows like Shark Tank. Mm-hmm. And over in... I think in England it's called The Dragon's Lair or something like that. It's
something like that, yeah.
Similar show. But so many people bring products on that show with no intent of ever getting a shark on the team. Because people know that if it's just seen before the show goes off the air, whatever inventory they had is wiped out, even if they don't get a deal.
Yep.
Because someone on that stage will go, well, I think you've got a good idea there. It's not a business yet, but it's a good idea. Okay, don't sign up. Thank you for helping me liquidate my inventory. That's exactly. That's a type of unpaid influencer marketing.
That's very true. I actually have a friend of mine who was on Shark Tank. She had a dating app. Mm-hmm. And basically she was on Shark Tank and was destroyed. Like they just tore her down and said, this is, you know, repetitive idea. It won't work, et cetera, et cetera. Users went through the roof. She had, you know, a peak in her business for probably a good 2 or 3 years. She had a lot of people in the investor and entrepreneur community coming to her saying the sharks were wrong. Mm-hmm. This is a really good idea. So even in a situation like that, when she got, you know, basically chopped in half on national television, it was really good for her business.
Yeah. And again, it's not all influence marketing has to be paid.
Right.
There are great marketing teams that have connections to get products out there for people to try to get that organic look.
Yeah, there's agencies out there that actually specialize in just distribution of products to micro and nano influencers. Mm-hmm. One that I talked to for the book that I wrote is called I've forgotten the name of it. I'll come back to it in a minute. But anyway, what they do is they basically you say, I want to, let's say you sell lipstick. So you say, I want 150 influencers, and by influencers, they mean micro and nano. So people with, you know, 5,000, 15,000 followers, whatever. I want 150 of those to try my lipstick and, you know, post a review of my lipstick on my website, and then let me use their posts on my social media, which when you think of it, if you get 150 different pieces of content for your social media, heck, that's a year's worth of content there for some people who only post a couple times a week. Right.
Absolutely.
So it could be well worth the investment. They're not paying these influencers anything. They're giving them a product for free. And so there has to be the disclosure that, hey, I received this product for free. FTC rules come in there, but it's not costing you anything more than product. I think I do think they ask you to provide a certain dollar amount in retail value, either in product or gifts or something like that, in order to incent them to do it. Mm-hmm. But you can literally engage hundreds of influencers with little more than the cost of your product.
Yep.
In order to get them, to post about you and to get, you know, content in return.
Yeah, and let's talk a little bit to be clear about, to caution folks about those that are not ethical and not moral. Today, I got an email from someone who claimed to be in England, and I'm sure that they're not. who has a service where you can get influencers by the dollar.
Yeah.
If you want 1,000 reviews on your YouTube videos, you can buy them.
Right.
And if you want 4,000 views or 4,000 hours of play and these kinds of things and reviews so that it looks like you have influencers, those are great ways to destroy your business.
Yeah. The sites like YouTube and Instagram and whatnot, where you're buying followers, you're buying views, you're, you know, buying likes, all that kind of stuff. They have algorithms and they routinely go in and identify that looks like suspicious behavior.
Yep.
Let's put it this way, just be logical about it. If you've got 1,000 followers on your YouTube channel or subscribers to your YouTube channel, which is a good number of subscribers for a lot of businesses, and you pay someone to drive, 40,000 views of a given video, that's a red flag, because 1,000 people aren't going to watch 40,000 of anything, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to just be smart about it. And those services typically get dinged, you get dinged, you end up having to dig yourself out of a hole to get your credibility back. I just blanket would never use them.
Yep. And there's another part to it too, from a practical standpoint. Even if for some reason you think it's ethical to do that,
mm-hmm.
now as you create content, you really don't know if it's having the impact that you want it to have,
right?
Because you've got a bunch of drones, zombies out there reacting and doing. So you're increasing your marketing dollar, your ability to promote, without knowing whether or not you're being impactful.
And the influencers out there that have built big audiences doing that are getting found out, because the influencer marketing software packages you subscribe to now as a brand to help you find the right influencers to use, they have like percent spam follower counts so that you can see, well, this person's got 150,000 followers and they have really great content, but 60% of their followers are bots and spam and paid for.
Yeah.
That means they're not very credible and you're not going to get the kind of engagement rates out of them that you want.
Yeah. In the same realm of this, the negative side of this, what are the wrong moves in terms of selecting influencers and things that can actually hurt your business if you don't have a logical and intelligent ethical strategy?
Well, there's probably two big things. The first thing is you really need to make sure and do your research on the front end to make sure the influencers that you are using really align with your brand, because it's easy and tempting to say, well, I want to use a Kardashian, or I want to use someone with, 250,000 followers because they have a lot of followers. But if you are a premium product and, they're doing their videos with backwards ball caps and ripped up jeans and t-shirts, there's a disconnect there, right? So you got to make sure there's really good alignment so that their content looks and feels like the content that your audience is going to appreciate. So that alignment's probably the first mistake I see a lot of brands making, is they just go after the follower counts and they don't pay attention to really the quality of the influencer they're using. And kind of at the same time, what you also have to do when you're doing that front end analysis is you've got to make sure that influencer, and they should be able to give you some information that'll help you understand this, make sure they can move the needle for your business. You know, if you're trying to drive awareness and just get more people to know who you are, that's one thing. You can go for the big audiences at that point. But if you're trying to drive foot traffic in your retail store, if you're trying to drive conversions on your website, you need to know with some degree of reliability that the influencers you're choosing can persuade their audience to actually do something other than hit the like button, right? You need to have ones that have conversion rates that can say, hey, I did a previous project that had, a similar goal and we drove, 20,000 conversions on their websites doing this program because my audience responds to me. Dig a little deeper, ask them for some success metrics, some proof positive that they can do what you want them to do, and you'll probably avoid a lot of mistakes.
You know, the fangled way, the core of our business is helping people convert every touch into a voracious advocate for their brand. There's a pitfall to that, which falls right into what we're talking about. Imagine if the influencer that we're working with is misusing our product, or they're making promises that it can't keep, or anything else that could be, all of a sudden you find out that influencer is involved in some radical political group that you don't want to be affiliated with. All of those things matter. I came from an industry for a very short period of time where fans of their product created fan groups, and they would have like reunions where they would bring all the people together that were fans of it.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone thought, well, that's fantastic. Well, if one of those non-sanctioned, not sponsored meetings were to happen, imagine somebody got hurt, yep, or somebody did something stupid and got arrested, or some, you know, take it to the next level, someone got killed at that event, that can negatively affect your brand.
Absolutely.
So caution to this influencer thing. I used to laugh when like the Jackass guys were doing stuff. You, what kind of a product would want those guys as their influencer? And the reality is there were a lot of brands that were placed and a lot of people who banked on, because the audience that they were going after, that segment, mm-hmm, were ones that would like to see somebody get hurt because they think it's funny.
Yeah, sure. So, but I mean,
that whole part is really important.
It is. And you know, a lot of my clients that I've dealt with over the years are in the spirits industry.
Yes.
And so, you know, that's one where we have to be really careful about the influencers we choose, because, you know, the spirits industry, whether you know anything about it or not, sure, I can tell you from working with spirits brands for almost 20 years now, they really are, all of the companies are really adamant about the fact that we have to market a certain way. We're not trying to, you know, go close to the line, blur the lines. We don't market to kids. There's, if you're underage, you don't get it. We're going to stay as far away from that as possible. And every spirits brand I've worked with is like that. They're insistent that this is, yep, for a certain age group, et cetera, et cetera. But when we choose influencers that we have to, that we're going to work with, we have to, you know, do background checks. We have to understand, do they have a series of DUIs? Are they the kind of person who's going to be doing an event where we're a sponsor or we're associated with them, and they're going to get nasty drunk and misbehave? Like, we just can't sure, come anywhere sure near that. Even the brands that are more marketed toward the, you know, party lifestyle type of consumer have to steer way clear of those types sure of influencers. I worked with a brand once, and we found an online comedian, and he's a little bit like a Jackass guy. He liked to do weird stunts and jump mm-hmm off of tops of houses into swimming pools and stuff like that. But before he would do these stunts, right? It wasn't me.
Okay, just checking.
No, but before he would do these stunts, he would take a 750 milliliter bottle of our product and drink the whole thing.
Oh, geez.
Which is off limits. No, that's overconsumption. That's not drinking responsibly. There's no way we would ever want anybody to do that. And I actually reached out to him and called him one time and got him on the phone and explained to him why we're not going to come anywhere near you as a sponsor or as a brand. We would love to, because we love your content. We think you're great, and we know you're a big fan of the brand, but there's no way. And here's why. And he was like, yeah, I get that. I understand. You guys got to follow the rules. I just won't use a sponsorship from you guys. I'm like, okay, if that's what you want to do, that's fine. But yep, if you clean it up, let me know.
Yeah. And keep consuming.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Buy all the bottles you want. We can't give you free ones if you're going to do that with it, for sure.
Yeah. So you're implying that the guy who's the influencer to sell top dollar single malt scotch is not the same guy?
No,
$2 chuck from the convenience
not store at all. I think if anybody in the single malt world saw somebody guzzling a whole bottle, they hunt them down and beat them
with the bottle.
That's not a responsible use of a good product right there.
Yeah. You know, I was in the beverage industry for a while. I was part of a team. We developed hybrid aging barrels for the spirits, oh, cool, and wine industry.
Nice.
So I'm really familiar with it. And it's funny, you know, the first time that you go to like a wine show, talk about mm-hmm influencer, you have this opinion of fine California wines as these very sophisticated guys in the, you know, and you go to the show, they're farmers.
Yeah.
And salt of the earth people who really care about making it, but their customer base doesn't need to know that.
No. Nope.
Because if they knew it was just farmers making this stuff, it wouldn't have the value as the teams of influencers who go out, the sommeliers and all of the,
right,
as we used to call them, the snooty crowd.
Oh yeah.
Which adds the value to the product, which is kind of the last part of influencing that I wanted to talk about, is how can people use influencers to change the perception of their product to get into new market spaces?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And that's what I would call, you know, sort of the advanced use of influence marketing, when you're really not using them for product placement or driving people to your website, but really just trying to change people's opinions based on who you're using. And it really goes back to that question of brand alignment, right? So,
yep,
and we'll stick with spirits. So I work in the bourbon industry a lot, and there's a lot of different brands of bourbon out there. It's been a big boom over the last 20 years. And there are bourbon brands that you would, you know, that are targeted toward and marketed toward the party crowd. So the, you know, the legal purchase age to 30 years old, they're going to go out and party. They're going to, you know, you know, have good weekend fun and all that good stuff. And then there are ones that are like, hey, our stuff is too good to mix. You know, don't put this in a cocktail. This is, you drink it neat. It's like scotch, you know, respect the, you know, the product. And then there's, you know, lots of brands in between. So in order to make sure that you are changing perceptions about your brand, let's say your brand is closer to that party crowd and people buy your product to, you know, mix in cocktails, do shots and things like that, that you would do if you're in college at a bar. Well, you want to align yourself differently than you align yourself with different influencers. You align yourself with a little older crowd. You align yourself with people who are much more, their content is much more focused around style and sophistication and, you know, elegance and whatnot. And so, like, for instance, if you go to, and this is one of my clients as a disclosure perspective, if you go to 1792bourbon.com, there's plenty of information there about the bourbon, but if you click on 1792 Style, it's an online magazine for what I would say the discerning lifestyle. Yes. So if you are high net worth or you aspire to be high net worth, there's fashion, home decor tips. There's certainly cocktail recipes. Because of COVID, the content there has a lot of focus on home bars and home entertainment. That is not something that a 22-year-old in college is necessarily going to think is cool. And so they're not, they're going to probably see that and go, well, 1792 bourbon maybe isn't for me yet. But the person who is somewhat successful in life, has achieved a little bit, has a little bit of discretionary income, wants to sort of bring their life to a more upscale thing, that's a bourbon they can align with. So it's really about that alignment on the front end that helps you.
That's a really good example. I'm glad we got onto to this part of the topic. I'm hoping folks listen all the way through to get to some of these really prime examples.
Good. I hope so too.
At the end of every one of my interviews, I always ask the same question because I,
okay.
I'm curious if there's anything that I should have asked you that I didn't, that you would like the audience to know.
Huh? Wow. That's a really good question. I don't think so. We covered a lot of good stuff. I think probably the only thing that I would say is, because when we touched on all this is when you think of influence marketing, again, stop thinking about the influencer and start thinking about the goal, the strategic thing that you're trying to accomplish. And if you look at it that way and take away that prejudice, that bias to think about Instagram and YouTube and start thinking about who can really influence my audience. I'm telling you, we did something for a local hospital not too long ago. And our primary influencers for that particular campaign, what we were trying to do, were school nurses and counselors, because they were going to talk to parents about children's healthcare issues with more authority and more frequency than other people. So yeah, local doctors were a part of it too, but none school nurses and school counselors don't have 25,000 followers on Instagram. And if they do, it's not the followers we're trying to reach, right? So you've got to start pulling back and thinking about influence, what you're trying to accomplish rather than the influencer. Yep. And I think that'll help you make a lot better decisions.
You know, I've been getting a lot of feedback from folks who watch the Fangled Cast, and people are starting to catch on to my secret theme, which is all of these things we're talking about are tactical tools.
Yep.
And none of them are of any use if you don't go back to the core to build your strategy based on who is your customer, what are their challenges, problems, desires, and how you as a company can resolve those and make their lives better. And when Absolutely. You have that in mind, influence marketing is certainly one of the tactical tools we look at first.
Sure.
In terms of building that strategy or implementing that strategy going forward. I'm so glad to have met you, Jason. I know this is a short time we've known each other, beginning to a very long future. I can see lots of ways that we could be working together in the future. And I'll put all of your information about your company, contact, shoe size, in case someone wants to buy you a pair. And really, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much.
Andrew, thank you for the time. I really appreciate it, man.
Yeah. And for those of you at home on your exercise bike, in your spacecraft, wherever you are listening to the podcast or watching it, share with a friend, like it if you liked it, subscribe, fax an old person so they know they can listen to it. And we'll see you on the next Fanglecast. Thanks so much, everybody. Bye now.
Brought to you by Fangled Technologies, where we help you convert every person your company touches into a voracious advocate for your brand.